Alle klara? Kamera recording?
Ja.
3, 2, 1, sure. And then we jump off with 7 miles per second, 7 kilometers per second. What's it, Aspen?
It's about 250 kilometers per hour, which is about 70 meters per second. 70 meters per second.
70 meters per second. Mm. Oh, that is crazy. Yeah, guys, welcome to this episode of Inspiri and Anders. My name is Luca Boyle, and with me together today in not his home country, Norway, but in Sweden, not far away, is Espen Fatnes. Hi, how's it going?
Hi, Luca. It's going good. I'm correctly in Sweden. I had to escape Norway. They're too strict on those corona rules, so I couldn't be there anymore. Now, I'm here in Stockholm, flying in an indoor directly wingsuit tunnel facility, which is like our dream gym. It's where we can perfectionize the muscle memory of human flight.
Yeah, and you already said it. You are world champion in skydiving discipline wingsuit, and that's what you're doing for a living, isn't it?
Yes, I'm doing it for a living. It took me quite a while before I had the guts to leave, what can I call, normal life and dare to see if I can live out of the sport. It's not a place to make a lot of money, but it's definitely a place to achieve dreams. If the dream is to fly and, you know, have a very free life of it's a dreamy pursuit of Peter Pan. And it's something I'm probably going to do until I die of age. I'm pretty certain of it.
We cross our fingers that you die of old age and not because of anything related to the sport you are doing. So I think you are. It's a second time I got a world champion on here. Like, the first one was Johan Abi from France. He's the skydiver. And he recommended you. Like, he made contact. He introduced us to each other. Thanks to him, we are sitting here, standing here, recording today. You just mentioned it. How, since when are you doing this whole... You're a skydiver and base jumper, but it's not the same, isn't it?
That is true.
Skydiving, base jumping.
That is true. So when we talk about skydiving, we talk about free fall jumping, or jumping out of flying objects such as airplanes most commonly, but also helicopters. It can be balloons. It can be pretty much anything that is a flying object.
Or space shuttle, like the German guy from Red Bull.
Felix Baumgartner did that historically and amazingly. Exactly. I believe it was in 2012 or 13.
Yeah.
It was the grandest and most seen skydive in history.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been lucky to meet Felix. I don't know him, but I've luckily met him once in Austria, and he's now flying helicopters. Oh, really? And he's still in air. And well, you asked me about when I started or how long I've done it.
Yeah.
I started skydiving in 2000, so a bit more than 20 years ago. I was fairly young. Not insanely young. I'm 42 now, so I was 21 years old back then. I quickly found it amazing. It was a new world of new adventures and quite an extreme experience to fall so fast towards the ground and actually feel control. And quite quickly after that, I started jumping off mountains, or what we commonly call base jumping, which is to use pretty much the same equipment as we do in skydiving, but now we jump from fixed objects, such as bridges, it can be antennas, buildings, big, steep mountain walls. And that has ended up being my two favorite activities in life, to either jump out of a flying object or off a fixed object.
I think there's in both things, there is a lot of adrenaline going on, isn't it?
It is. It really is. Especially in the beginning. When I did my first skydive, I was so scared. I still today can't remember the free fall. I've forgotten the whole thing. I had like a mental block. That tells a little bit about the
Blackout.
fear that can be involved in falling so fast.
Yeah.
And the adrenaline was definitely very present in the beginning, the first couple of years. It's also very present if I'm doing something that truly scares me, if I'm pushing my limits very far. But now today, when I do this so much, I do it pretty much like in everyday life, it's not that much adrenaline. It's more the learning process or putting together all the pieces of what I know and then come up with good solutions for how to run projects or practice towards a larger championships or yeah, it's more endorphin based than adrenaline based, I would say.
Okay, but I mean, that's a good transition
It is definitely,
to
yeah.
make. It's a good transition. So 20 years ago, when you started the whole skydiving thing, it wasn't a big thing then, since then, or like it wasn't really popular. I mean, when we look at it now, pretty everybody knows skydiving, at least with a parachute from a plane. But wingsuiting is also like inside of skydiving, it's a small discipline inside of skydiving, and it's not so well known. So when I think back 20 years ago, when I was just like starting to going to school, how was it then? Because it wasn't, how did it reach to you? How did it come to you? How did you, find it?
The commercial part of wingsuiting came in the market in 1999. So the last year before 2000, that's when the common or normal skydiver was able to buy a wingsuit and go to a drop zone, a skydive center, and actually jump it. And I entered the scene the year after. And it's funny. You can say that the skill level was amazingly low because it was so early in the beginning. The people that made the suits and started this, they totally stepped into the unknown. Some of them definitely had some other skills from skydiving that made them quite capable of doing risk assessments. But a lot of the people that started wingsuiting were not very capable skydivers. And when I started wingsuiting, which was in the year after I started, so 2001, I just joined a larger group of less capable, extremely risk willing, semi cowboys. That it's quite amazing to look back at how many of us that survived because the insight into the dangers was so low that we didn't even understand how much danger we put ourselves in. Like we had so little knowledge that we unknowingly almost died many, many times, just landed by surprise and be like, oh, that went well. So that was the scene back then. That quite amazing how low skill level it was.
I mean, even when you tell me like 1 year after you started skydiving, you started wingsuiting, I would imagine that even though it seems similar to both disciplines, I would imagine it's totally different. Like skydiving and wingsuiting with a skydiving with a parachute, jumping out of a plane and wingsuiting down. It's like, is it that different or is it quite similar?
It's quite different, and a
Okay.
wingsuit can feel claustrophobic. You are strapped inside a suit that is making you unable to, for example, reach your arms above your head, and that means that it's much more technical to stay in balance. It's harder to stay in a symmetrical body position when you decide to open your parachute, for example. And a lot of these suits can put you into very uncontrolled spins where you lose control and you need quite a lot of free fall body awareness and flying skills to get out of it. And so to go into wingsuit skydiving the year after you start skydiving is today known as quite unwise. And the experience level I had is also regarded today horrible. To go into wingsuiting, but back then, life was slightly different, and we hadn't yet seen a highly skilled group of instructors and mentors that realized what was needed to, in a more safe way, approach wingsuiting. But at the same time, back then the wingsuits were much smaller and not as efficient. So today, it's almost like back then we had this really slow cars, while today we have Ferraris. So we got a little bit saved as a community by this very, like, not that efficient small wingsuits. They luckily helped us to survive being inexperienced.
Yeah, to raise a little bit slower to the ground.
Yeah,
and make more safe landings.
Exactly.
But how did you remember, or do you remember some certain situations where you think back now and are like, well, that was close. I wouldn't do that again.
Oh, I have so many. So, I vividly remember one, and I believe this was in 2001. So this was probably only 4 or 5 months after I put on a wingsuit from an airplane, and I'd already taken it to a mountain. And I jumped off a mountain not far away from where I grew up in Norway. And I realized while I was flying that I wasn't good enough to fly to actually reach the landing area. So I decided I need to open my parachute and see if I can get there under parachute instead, or at least I need to open it because the ground is coming. And I ended up with a lot of line twists. So I was spinning under the canopy, and there was like a lot of line twists above my head. And I hadn't yet learned properly how to get out of line twist because I was quite an inexperienced jumper. So I was looking up at this, and I realized I need to get the zippers up on my suit. And I was really stressed, so because it is quite claustrophobic to be in a wingsuit. So I tried to get the zippers up, and I couldn't. They got stuck in my jacket or something. And then I had this this cutaway system on the wingsuit, but I hadn't properly prepared to drill how to use the cutaway system, so I couldn't find it. So after a lot of battling, I realized, okay, I'm 5 seconds away from crashing into this hillside, really steep hillside under my canopy. And I just need to do whatever I can to turn the canopy in a better direction. And I grabbed up and I did whatever I could. And luckily, I was able to turn away from the hill. I was probably 3-4 meters away from it. Very relieved over this move that potentially saved my life. I was quite happy, and I grabbed the steering handles still inside the suit. So I was kind of like cramped up inside the suit while holding the steering. And then I look forward and I see straight into a cable right in front of my eyes, which was this high cable that because I was badly prepared, I hadn't actually noticed that there was a cable going from that ridge that I just managed to get away from. So in between me and the landing, it was a big cable. So I pushed down both the steering lines, and I managed to just pass over the cable. But then the whole canopy collapsed, and I started falling down. And I basically crash landed in a garden. I landed on my back under a canopy that didn't fly particularly well. Yeah. And I landed, luckily, in a bunch of bushes. So I was just laying on my back in these bushes, still inside the suit. Like, I hadn't actually been able to unzip the suit or anything. And I was laying down there thinking, I think I need to do some more skydives and prepare better next time.
Whoa, there wasn't only one situation. There was like three in one.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, how high were you when the parachute collapsed? Like, what do you think?
Maybe about 50 meters above the ground. Yeah, I think they're 40, 50 meters above the ground. And then I was just going straight down under what we call a stalled out canopy. And today I would have done things differently. It would probably go better. But back then,
I
just had such a low understanding of what to do in situations that I can't remember very accurately what I did, but I obviously did a lot of wrong things. that just constantly put me into this almost really bad situations. And then finally I was just laying on the ground, really happy to be on the ground, really relieved to have the soft bushes under me, and thinking, well, I got away with that one as well.
What did you tell the homeowners, like the garden owners? Were they there, like sitting in the garden, making barbecue and stuff, and then suddenly an aspen drops out of the sky, out of nowhere?
I don't think anyone was home. I was quite embarrassed, and I just collected my gear and ran over to the car.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was home.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe it was better. Do you have these kind of, I think you don't have these extreme kind of situations now anymore, but do you find yourself in similar situations, like dangerous situations, after 20 years of doing it? Or is it like, now I got everything under control, it's like piece of cake every jump?
That's a really good question. So I have to say it's not often anymore, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And it couldn't be, because I'm doing so many jumps every year. So if that has happened often, I would really have to reconsider what I'm doing. Yeah. But, you know, humans do mistakes. I do mistakes. I stumble. I lose my wallet. I do mistakes in traffic. I often do mistakes just like you and everyone else, which means that I can do mistakes in skydiving and base jumping no matter how good I am. And no matter how well prepared I am, there will always be a risk. That's why it's called a risk sport. And so I'm fully aware of that. I can injure or die any day in what I do. That's something I need to accept. And I think everybody that do skydiving or base jumping have to accept. I do everything I can in my life to prevent it. I'm putting a lot of efforts into understanding the risk I'm taking, doing measurements to decrease it. But I always sit back with this little risk that is left that I just cannot do anything about. It can be others that do a severe mistake that hurt me. It can be random things like a strong gust of wind. It can be that the gear is failing in a way that I never foresaw would happen. The thing is, if I want to do this with joy and fun, and I want to feel good about what I'm doing when I'm standing on top of a mountain or in an airplane, I actually have to be able to kind of throw that away. That uncertainty, I can't let it be too apparent in my head, because it's always going to be there. And instead, I just have to accept it and then just embrace it and have fun. Continue to bring it in and continue to work on whatever I can to reduce the risk.
I love how you put it in words, because what also Johan said is, it's a risk sport, and if you make a mistake, you don't end up with a torn ACL or broken thumb or whatever. You end up in the ground, and the people can just let you there and bury you, because you won't get out of the ground when you do a mistake doing this risk sports. The chances are high when you do a mistake in this heights. So I love that you say this risk, you have to put it away, but in some way you have to embrace it. You have to be aware of it, because otherwise you get too lavish, too loose, too overconfident maybe, and then stupid mistakes happen. And stupid mistakes are, in that sport, you can't afford them.
You cannot,
I suppose.
It's a very deadly sport, unfortunately. When it comes to wingsuiting from mountains, or wingsuit base jumping, as I would call it, I think I can safely say it's the most dangerous or deadly sport that we have seen in modern times. We are not a lot of people, really? But we are seeing way too many fatalities. And there are many reasons for it. It's not a lot of margin in it. And there's not room for a lot of errors. And in this environment, we don't have any regulations. It's totally free. Anyone, you can just put on a wingsuit and jump off Gavia in Rio de Janeiro right now and nobody would stop you.
Yeah.
And that means that we can, there is no selection. Everybody can just come and do it. And what we see is that this is a sport for the most risk willing. So we see a lot of fairly young guys that by personality is very risk willing. They are willing to take shortcuts out of a huge motivation of big achievements, or it can be driven by ego or an ambition to achieve a lot. And people rush forward and they do mistakes and they become part of this long, long, long list of fatalities. And it's terrible, actually. It's tough to watch. And myself, I couldn't have been part of that list. That story I just told, it could have been the story that was written in that list of how Espen died.
Yeah.
And so I'm here today after 20 years in the sport. A lot based on huge motivation and a huge drive to take care of myself, but also a little bit of luck.
Yeah. It also has, it always has to be a little bit of luck. Or bad luck is also possible. Yeah. Is it when, what popped up in my mind when you talked about like this young people risk seeking, looking for the thrill maybe of like more adrenaline with everything they are doing. You're doing this for quite some time now. Do you see a difference now that social media is so present in young people's life, that they are like maybe people coming and trying wingsuiting because they say, I have to do that, like that is so crazy, I have to top my last thing I did, and after base guy like wingsuiting, base jumping, I have to do the next crazy thing until there is no crazier thing to do. Like, have you experienced that, or is it like no, that's not happening?
The development of the sport today is on high octane compared to what it was in the early 2000s before social media. And it's both positive and negative. So the negative part of it is that people may make choices of how much risk they want to take based on creating videos or something spectacular they want to display to the broader audience. But at the same time, social media, and specifically I would say Facebook, have been connecting everyone in the sport together in different forums and different places where we can share mistakes, we can share cool videos, we can inspire each other, and it has contributed to a much increased awareness of different aspects of safety and issues in the sport. So it's like pros and cons in it. And also it recruits more people. Back in early 2000s, you really had to work for it to be part of the sport. You couldn't sign up for a course online. You couldn't just go somewhere and...
Which online?
Yeah, exactly. And you had to find some mentor that would maybe approve you after a long, long time of showing you had a good attitude or the right motivation. Well, now today, everything is more commercialized and you don't need to Google a lot online to find base courses, skydive courses, and figure out exactly the path you need to go to be able to stand, for example, on top of a mountain and jump off. That journey can be displayed for you within 10 minutes or on Google. And it wasn't like that back in the days. But if you look at the statistics, the worst period we've had was between 2011-12 and 2016. That is the hardest, toughest period. We lost way too many people. But since then, it has changed. And partially, I wonder if people have a bit matured on this like information flow and matured on that it's almost like too much out there of spectacular videos and information, that it's not, you can't just go on a mountain, jump off and brag about it because it's so common. So At least we have seen a drop of more than 50% in fatalities in wingsuit the last couple of
Oh
years.
wow, that is a lot.
So that's good.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yes.
50%, like,
It
yeah,
matters.
that's something. As when we go back to when we go into the time between your near-death experience where you landed in the garden and your World Cup win, your World Cup victory, what happened in that time period, and how long was it? Like, when did your first jump was 2001, or maybe around about that, 2000, 2001, and when did you win your World Cup?
So I almost really screwed up on that wingsuit jump, which I believe was in late fall 2001, and I won the World Cup in the official World Cup in or World Championships in wingsuiting
Yeah.
in 2018. So that's 17 years of
Oh,
span,
wow.
and if I
Wow.
broadly look at that time, it's not a story purely about air sport. But when I was in my young 20s, I was usually affected by the expectations of the upbringing and my society in getting a good education and getting a good job and follow the proper way. And even though I really wanted to just purely go out and go nuts in extreme sports, I was held back in some ways by this thought. And I had many years at the university. I had many years in a normal job as a geographer. And through this time, I had wingsuiting as a hobby. It was something I did in the weekends or during holidays. At some point, and this was around 2011, I started to struggle with defending going up in the mountains and jump because the job was so demanding that I was starting to feel uncurrent. Especially in current compared to the level in the sport. And at the time, I met a young guy from Norway, Jocke Sommer, which totally had a I had a totally different upbringing, obviously, because he just, when he passed 20, he was like, I'm going to be a professional wingsuit base jumper. And his vision of that and how he wasn't held back by anything and he really believed in that path, I was able to find the courage to quit my job and see if I could survive financially and as a human being professionally in base jumping. And in 2012, I quit my job and I went full time as a wingsuit skydiver and base jumper.
Oh, wow.
And with that came a different focus on how much resources I wanted to put in getting good. So my thought at that time was, if I'm gonna survive this sport for a long time and do it in everyday life in huge quantities, I need to get insanely good. I need to have like this the maxed out understanding of safety, but also I need to be cutting edge to defend a position where I can get sponsors and win prize money or be a mentor that people actually pay money to be mentored by. I need to truly increase my level. And from that point, I turned into, I would say, quite a serious, not, I don't know about the word athlete, but a serious, passionate wingsuiter where I was practicing mentally, physically. I was doing tunnel flying, skydiving, huge amounts, and lots of base jumps. I wanted to be current, I wanted to discover everything. And that turned into a victory at the FAI World Cup of Wingsuit Flying in 2015. That was the first year it became an official discipline. And
Oh wow, you were the first to win it.
yeah, and then
Oh,
from
nice.
there, I got to be part of the national team in skydiving in Norway, which gave me support to train even more. And I met my girlfriend that I am living with today, which at that time was a professional tunnel coach and incredibly skilled in body flying. And we basically joined up together, and I said, okay, you got all these amazing skills in indoor vertical tunnel flying, and I got all these skills in the mountains and wingsuiting. Let's team up and learn from each other and make a power team. And then from there, it just moved on with ridiculous amounts of travels and flying and training, oh, yeah. and it just built on and built on. And I would say that the biggest moment, at least in terms of competition, happened in 2018, because in 2018 the sport of competing in wingsuiting from airplanes had grown really big, and the level was really high, and it was the World Championships, and it was one of those competitions where everything went my way. Like, every single run was one of the best jumps I've ever done, and I had some luck as well. And it was like everything, it was kind of like all the planets were in the perfect line in a way for me. And the last day before the last jump, I realized that I'm actually going to make this. I'm actually going to win. And I remember quite vividly when I came out of the measurement window and I was finished with the competition, I was still in free fall. I was just kind of singing to myself, like, I am a world champion. And I was just, I kept on flying for about 30 seconds laughing. And I was like, oh my God, this just happened. That's wow. Because it's a huge difference between, you know, getting a solid result, ending up in fifth or fourth, and then actually win it. Because to win,
it's best.
It's really hard. Like, there are a lot of people around that are trying really hard to win. And it might be that I'm never winning again. It might be that that was the only time in my life I could titulate myself as a world champion. That could be. Yeah. And I was really enjoying it. It was a weird experience being really proud of myself after a lot of years of training and hard work. Yeah. So that was 17 years, almost crashing it.
Crashing a barbecue till winning the World Cup.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. 17 years. I can imagine that what you're saying, that's exactly why when we talk about a sport and we talk about the GOATs, like the greatest of all times to do this sport, like some names pop up like Cristiano Ronaldo in football or Tom Brady in American football. It's like, because they did something no one else did before them, they continued winning. Like, they won and won and won and won. And every sport has like so many good, excellent athletes who could win, who just need the stars to align perfectly, and you win. But the GOATs are like, they are the GOATs because they won and won and won, yeah. and they never stopped winning. And that's why I can imagine that what you're saying, that it's like really hard to repeat it. I can imagine that, and that's why so few are actually achieving this goal, like so few in sports, like achieving goals in general, like winning World Cup after World Cup and never losing or going in second place. And that's why it's amazing to win once.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Like, that's a, you 2018, you were the best of the best skydivers in the world. And that is fantastic. I mean, I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed it, that it was such an intense moment for you, and that you could even enjoy it while still competing, like while still flying. That's crazy. Congratulations for that.
Thank you.
When is the next World Cup?
It's in August. And
okay.
There has been a bit of a twist. So when I won in 2018, I won in a discipline called performance wingsuit flying, which is almost like drag race of wingsuiting. It's a competition where they see who can fly the fastest, the furthest. It's like the max out performance you can get out of a race suit, like the most badass suits we have. There is another wingsuit discipline, which is more like dancing in the sky. It's called acrobatic wingsuit flying. And it is quite similar to acrobatic airplane flying, where they are doing all these acrobatics. And we have decided, together with the Norwegian Federation of Skydiving, that we are going to compete in acrobatic wingsuit flying at the World Championships. And that means that there are two performers. The two performers, that's me and my girlfriend. So that's pretty cool. I get to compete with her. And we have a cameraman. And he is following us, or he is flying with a camera on his head, capturing what we do. So it's a display of skills. And when you land, you deliver the video to the judges. And then you have to plan a routine, just like in figure skating, you plan a routine and then the judges are viewing the routine you do and consider the technical difficulty, the style, exactly. Yeah. And it is, for me, I needed something else, I think, because I've been competing in that drag race discipline for many years. And it was very inspiring to think of stepping a little bit sideways and try another discipline. And for sure, we are dreaming of winning, but it's quite tough. There are some teams there that have competed much more than us and are, at least as of now, much better. So that's partially why we are at the Wings Eternal here in Stockholm. But funny enough, though, the World Championships is supposed to happen in Russia in August. And as maybe some viewers know, and you might know, is that Russia have had state... They have a verdict on them for a state system of performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah.
It started in Sochi Olympics, and so they got a big.
Yeah, why they were excluded from the Olympics and stuff like
that. This is far above my pay grade, or what can I say? Far above my head. This is the big money circus of sports, and in the verdict in their verdict, it says that Russia is not allowed to host an international championships on home ground, or they can't actually host it in Russia. So right now, it's actually out in the blue if the World Championships is going ahead in Russia. I know this turned into a little bit nitty gritty, but it's funny how this little discipline of skydiving just became almost like a victim of the big money Olympics and endurance sports that have like all this money, and all of a sudden skydivers are like, what? Us? Like, we don't use performance enhancing drugs. Well, someone might smoke a joint in the backseat or whatever, but performance enhancing drugs, like, that's not our game. That wouldn't help at all. But
it's funny that you tell us this, because there's a documentary, it's called Icarus, like on Netflix or Amazon Prime, where this guy does this bike racing, bike tours, and does it like clean, and then he wants to get an expert and wants to dope the shit out of him and compete again and see where the difference is. And then this guy from Russia comes over, like, who's the head of the anti-doping agency from the government and stuff, and he tells like everything. We dope everybody. Every sport is doped in Russia, and it's like the only thing they are not doping, he tells, is like the figure skaters, because with testosterone they become a little bit more masculine. That's not good for like the visuals.
Well,
crazy. It's crazy that I can imagine that they don't want to host it in Russia. He admitted it, that they are doping everybody. Everybody, no sports excluded. Yeah. Everybody gets doped, and that's crazy. This guy lives now in exile in America. In the US, no one knows where he's living, because the government is like searching for him and probably want to do some bad things with him when they catch him. But okay, a little bit off topic. When you decided you're going to quit your 9-to-5 job and decided I'll become a professional skydiver, everything on that card, was there any moment when you thought, maybe that was the wrong decision? Maybe I fucked that up.
Yes, it has been some moments. And I think the main reason for why it's been a little bit troubling in my head is because I come from a family that I have a lot of sisters and brothers that are working with very meaningful jobs of helping people or being engaged in something that is bigger than themselves. And pursuing this dream of human flight or finding my potential in flying is a very narcissistic path. It's not necessarily for the benefit of many others. I might inspire some people, and maybe that someone get a better life by seeing me and choosing to join me on some hikes and we become friends, and then or people start skydiving and they find a huge joy in it and it lifts up their life. That could be. But I used to have a job where I was working quite hard to serve different departments with mapping information and help out in different projects in Norway, where that was a key part of success in different parts of how to run. This was the military side of Norway. And I constantly had this sense of being part of something bigger. And then in the second I quit my job, I just left that completely. And I felt I was part of a bunch of people that are quite selfish. Oh my God. It's quite a lot of selfish base jumpers. Like a lot of cool characters in skydiving and base jumping. Great people. And we often are. When people dare to be themselves and just go nuts, they turn often into very interesting human beings. But that have made me question a little bit what I'm doing. But it's 10 years ago now, and I'm not very qualified anymore to have a normal job. I've just been cruising around on this like ego journey. And it's been really meaningful personally. I have had a lot of amazing adventures, and I met a lot of really inspiring people. And I've also had opportunity to work a lot on safety and education in the skydiving community, especially in Norway. And that is a passion that maybe is extra driven because it gives a little bit more of a meaning to what I do than just pursuing my own perfection or learning curve. But apart from that, it feels extremely meaningful. It's something about finding something in life that really give goosebumps to think about. And in my head, when I think about this childish dream I have of that at some point in the future, I will truly find my maximum potential of flying my body. And then alongside with this dream of finding my own max skill set, I see the development of wingsuits develop to be better and better and better every day. I dream that one day I will be able to take off from a ridge next to birds and soar on the winds, purely flying my own body, and that I can choose how long I want to be up there and become truly Peter Pan, truly be a flying human being together with this awesome community that I'm part of. And that dream in itself is so goosebumpy, so radical in my head that it turns very meaningful no matter what.
Yeah, that's a great vision you have, a great picture for the future, like a great dream you got there in your head, and it keeps you driving, and when you speak about it you lighten up, like you get really passionate about it, and that's great. And you are doing something for society, Espen. I mean, sports are a big thing for society. Like sports are the thing for society, for your leisure time, and even for the economy. Like this is huge, like sports in general, like don't underestimate that. And you are part of developing one sport, because wingsuiting was a no one, a nobody in 2001 when you started, and now it's known by the majority of people, at least in Europe. I don't know outside of the world, but I guess outside of Europe as well. And you were part of this growing community, and you did your part. Like you did this small part there, or maybe even a bigger part when you were when you won the World Cup in 2018, and you decided, okay, I quit my job and I will become a professional here, and I will put everything I got into this sport and make it big and make myself one of the best. And it paid off in 2018, and it will pay off again. I'm pretty sure of that.
I hope
someone
so.
Someone with your work ethic and your passion about it, I have no doubt about that.
Thank you.
When you consider everything that happened, like from the first near-death experience till the World Cup you won, till now the whole Corona thing and all decisions you made in your life. Are you happy where you are at the moment?
I haven't been happier. This is by far the most meaningful and happy place that I've ever been in. And I have, in some ways, found really peace with finding a life partner that can accept that weirdo I am, because she's the same. Yeah,
And
because she's the
shares your
same kind of
passions.
weirdo too. So we're sort of sharing this journey together. And maybe the wildest thing about like how good it feels now is I have learned more the last 2 years than I learned the previous 18. It's for
Wow.
certain, and that in itself have made right now quite amazing, because it has opened up the eyes to the potential of the journey further. That learning is still happening, and even more than before. It's something about by learning, you learn to learn, and then you learn to learn more, and then you become more and more able to do like really proper, deliberate training in huge quantities, and that in itself becomes inspiring, and then that make me happy. And it's like a forward drive that just builds and builds and builds. It's very highly advised to get on a meaningful learning curve, whether it's a normal job or another sport or music or anything. Like when you get on that roll, it's like a tunnel. Like it's like warp speed. I think there's
You get in the
something in us
flow.
humans that really want to put a lot of motivation into learning. Like if you get on that learning zone, it's seriously cool to live.
Yeah, and I mean, if you find your passion, the learning comes from itself. Like
Yeah.
you're motivated by what you're doing, and you don't have to motivate yourself and to get out of bed and put the work in. Most of the time, you are motivated from inside out. So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's
Absolutely.
great to see you're happy and you smile like really big when you said that. So, Aspen, who would you like to hear on this podcast if you could invite someone? Who inspired you?
Now, I've been inspired by so many people. I could start from the beginning and say that most of my journey is due to all the people I met along the way that had skills I didn't have myself, or had ideas or thoughts or angles to what I do that I didn't think about myself. But the single most game-changing person I've had in my life in air sports is another Norwegian, Jocke Sommer. He is still today probably one of the most like famous characters of our sport. He travels the world, he sees no limits to anything. And the reason why I'm saying Jocke is because he's the person who made me professional. He didn't tell me to go professional, but he showed the way, because he was 21, 22 years old, and he was already a full-time professional wingsuit skydiver and base jumper. And nothing stopped him. He believed so big, and he believed the sport could grow bigger, and he believed it was possible. And he convinced me that it's possible to quit that safe, normal, expected job to have and just go out in the world and just go for it. Like he wasn't, it wasn't like he was willing to go for it in terms of taking the risk of jumping off a mountain, but he was also willing to take that risk of not having any kind of safety financially or in the infrastructure around him with family or friends or anything. He just like went out in the world and he said, I'm just gonna do it. And I followed him. I said, okay, screw this, I'm following Jocke. There is something about him, like there's some kind of aura around him that I need to follow and see where it goes.
I'm on board.
And I actually, it
Count
ended
me
up
in.
like I quit my job and I went on a 1 year journey around the world with him. learning, following him on base jumps, wingsuit jumps, and we just like traveled the world for 1 year. Me, Jukka, and a French guy, Ludovic Wirt. And when I came home, I was like, all right, let's continue doing this. Yeah, so Jukka Sommer. It was a long answer, but yeah, Jukka.
Fine. He has quite the aura, huh? Mm. If you are convinced, like, okay, let's quit my job and let's go 1 year around the world. Wow, that sounds like an amazing story. I hope I can get him on the podcast.
I think he's going to spend the next 2 months on Sumatra, I believe it's called, or somewhere in the Indonesia, because he wanted to spend 2 months improving his surfing skills so he could have surf a tube for more than 2 minutes or something. So he is on this little island somewhere in one of the most remote places in the world.
So I think I won't catch him there, but maybe afterwards. Yeah. Aston, what's your favorite song?
I think, I almost have to introduce it, but there is this extremely badass band that is no longer playing, or they don't play as much as before, which, a Norwegian one called Turbo Negro. It sounds a bit odd, the name, but they are it's a funny rock or metal band, and they always open their concert with the song The Age of the Pampers, and it's like a bullshit lyrics. It's really weird. It's about pizza. It's about not giving a fuck. But every time that song started on concerts, I was young, in the mid-20s. I'd just been out base jumping, just landed back in the city where I was studying, having a beer with friends, going in there in the concert. And when that song started, everybody was like, and it just builds up, and then they go completely crazy with makeup and weird uniforms, just going nuts. And it was always the best of times when I went to concerts with Turbo Negro. And it's a song that I've had in my brain doing base jumping, doing skiing. And it's one of those songs that remained with me through my life because it inspired me, and it meant something to me when I was in my young 20s and I was shaping this life that ended up being a weird life about flying. I was listening to them. And I think that song for me has always been about just send it. Like, just go for it. Don't worry too much. Like, freaking send it. That's what that song is about for
just
me.
Just do it.
Yeah, just do it.
Yeah. Great. Guys, check out the song on the Spotify playlist of this podcast. When this episode gets launched, it will already be on it on Spotify. Aston, thank you very, very much for your time and this amazing story about your life, and that you told it, and I'm so happy to have had you here. Like, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for letting me be here, Luca. And it's almost strange to tell all these stories, because yes, I've told some of them before, but it's always special to meet a new person that is curious about this odd little sport of mine that not too many people do. And to give a little background to it, because we are just humans that are trying to figure out a life, and it's been very meaningful to get really good questions and open up about it and have a good conversation with you.
It was my pleasure, Espen. I would say, before I wrap this whole thing up, you tell the people out there where they can find you on social media, and then I wrap it up.
I think the best way of finding me and seeing my activities would be on Instagram, which is at Espen Fadness. That is a place I post quite regularly. I don't post every day, but I try to post quality whenever I do, and try to make some funny Insta stories sometimes.
All right, guys, you heard it. Check it out. You also find him on the podcast. He's linked on the post to this episode. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I hope you can take something away from our talk here with Espen. Espen, thank you very much for joining. And guys out there, stay healthy. and hear you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.